Billy Rose on Greenland. We're talking with Kelly Elsrott. And Kelly, before you get decimated by all these calls, I want to talk about the Urantia book and the Fifth Revelation. A couple of things. One, I want to make it very, very clear that you didn't write the Urantia book. You've only brought it forth and, you know, interpreted it a little bit with modern science. And the other thing I'll let you say, because a lot of people are you know, going to worry about you and you go to hell and damnation because you don't believe the true word. And you are a practicing Catholic and you feel that this Urantia book has helped you become an even better Catholic. Is that right?
Yes, sir. I raised my children. In fact, they go to Catholic parochial schools. And when they have their confirmation when they're 17, I give them a copy of the Urantia book, but I don't compel them to read it. It's up to them to choose their path to God.
Okay, I just didn't want folks to call and say you're a messenger of the devil or something. So let's move along here.
I hope not.
Well, you never know what you're going to find.
Lightning strike me if I am.
All right. This is Hilly Rose. Where are you calling from?
I am from Cross, Wisconsin.
Yes, ma'am. And your first name?
Jessica.
Okay, Jessica, go ahead.
Yes, first of all, happy Father's Day to both of you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. I've got six kids, Jessica, and they're all out of town, so I'm kind of lonely tonight. I'm glad I'm talking to you.
I know how you feel.
And he's got triplets, too.
Oh, Lord have mercy. Now I don't feel so bad.
Yeah, mine are in Paris.
One child, a cat, and a dog. I thought I was hurt. Anyway, I do. What is the gentleman's name?
His name is Kelly.
Kelly
Elstrott. Yeah, K-E-L-L-Y. Just call him Kelly. He's a friendly guy.
Okay, hi, Kelly.
Hi, Jessica.
First of all, a comment and then three quick questions, and then I'll hang up to listen. You were talking about why scientists don't believe the theologians and vice versa. Well, to me, in my own opinion, it's like a bird's wing. We'll take the eagle's wing. When one does not believe the other, the eagle's wings will break and the eagle will crash to the ground and vice versa. If they would only get together, the bird could balance out and fly, if you get my point.
Yeah, and that's really the real vein of this whole book is the Trinity, which is kind of a complicated subject. But the real thing, everything lines up in three in this book. You have the Universal Father who teaches us, who's the source of religion. You have the Eternal Son who teaches us philosophy. And then you have the Infinite Spirit who teaches us science. So Mother Nature almost is the source of science, if you want to call the Mother Spirit is the source of all knowledge. And so everything in this book kind of falls into three categories, whether it's faith being the God, wisdom being the Son, and knowledge being the source from the Mother Spirit. So you have these three facets, and if one is missing, the other two aren't balanced.
Okay, Jessica, you had three quick questions.
Yeah, and is it a Urantia book or La Urantia?
It's just the Urantia book, U-R-A-N-T-I-A.
Spell it again.
U is in uncle.
Yeah.
R is in rabbit. A is in apple. N is in nitro.
Oh, Urantia.
Yeah, Urantia.
You betcha.
Oh, okay,
yes.
Okay. The next question is, you said the nature of God. Is that the name of the book?
Well, there's the first 5 or 10 chapters of the Urantia book start with the story of the central universe where paradise is.
Okay.
If you open to page one of this book, the title of that paper is The Universal Father.
Yeah.
And the first, you want me to read you the first sentence
of
the Urantia book? The Universal Father is the God of all creation, the first source and center of all things and beings.
Okay, the last question is, you said Adam and Eve committed adultery.
Yeah, that was their downfall.
Pardon?
Yeah, that was their downfall.
Now, the question is, how could they commit adultery when they were only two of them?
Well, there was a couple of million evolved creatures who had been on Earth for 1 million years before Adam and Eve came here.
Right.
Evolution took over 500 million years and culminated in man, and man had been here for 1 million years before Adam and Eve came.
Okay, and I do have a quick fourth question, and I'll hang on, Kelly.
Okay.
It also says, of course, they had Cain and Abel, and then Cain and Abel went out and found wives and husbands. How did they do that? And I'll hang up.
Okay,
and
thank you.
And it was nice meeting both of you.
All right, thank
you.
Bye-bye. Well, I think it's sort of self-evident here, what you just said. There were all these other people, but go ahead.
Yeah, the reason why they committed adultery is really impatience. They have these warring tribes constantly causing trouble. They're trying to bring peace to Earth. And eventually they came up with the idea, why don't we mate with one of them, have a child with them, and then we'll make peace, kind of like the kings of Spain and Queen of France would, you know, marry their children off, if you will, and bring peace to the two countries? They tried doing that, and that wasn't according to the plan. And really, Cain and Abel, one of them was one of the bastard children of Adam and Eve. If you want to call it that, and that's not a nice word. I don't like that. But in any case, Adam and Eve, the Bible talks about how they went off to the land of Nod. And that's the Nodites in the Bible, a race of beings who resulted from the collapse of the first revelation of God.
All right, let's do a lot more calls. A lot more people want to talk to you.
Okay.
This is Silly Rose. Where are you calling from, please?
Eastern Washington.
Yes, sir. And your first name? Yeah, turn your radio down. Good thinking. Okay, what's your first name?
Steve.
Steve, all right, Steve, go ahead.
Well, I find it very unusual. I picked up a copy of The Rancho 2 weeks ago, and it has things, Kelly talked earlier about The Rancho not being accepted in the 50s. I think it's now come of age. I picked that book up, and I can't put it in. I've read 400 of the 500 pages. Remarkable that it goes into great detail about Christ's internal turmoil, about his interactions with people and how they try to put him on the pedestal.
Yeah, that's a whole area that I just didn't want to get into, but I alluded to, and I said he had problems just like all the rest of us.
That's right.
Yes, some people just wanted to recognize his divinity, others just wanted to treat him as human, and he had to try to walk a balancing act. When he fed the 5,000, remember they tried to make him a king. And he rejected that, and he lost 90% of his followers. His whole movement died after he refused to be king.
So one thing that I found real significant is when he turned the wine or the water into wine, Mary came to him and said, "Now my son has come of age. I promised all these people he would do this for me." And he got mad at Mary. He says, "I don't do things like this for a show. It has to come from internal place for it," and then the adjuster, as they refer to it, overrode his personal decision not to turn it into wine, and he was actually amazed when it did turn.
Yeah, well, what he said to his mother was, it will only happen if it's the will of God, and it was the will of God that he do something nice for his mother, so it happened.
Right.
He was surprised himself. He said, "Well, if it's his will, it'll happen." Well, sure enough, it was God's will at that time.
I think what's really significant of what you just said, Steve, is that 2 weeks ago you picked up this book. Was it in a bookstore?
No, I was actually in a spiritual gathering.
Okay.
And they had a Urantia table there, and I'd heard about the Urantia back in the 70s.
Well, the significant thing in my mind is that you said, and Kelly has said, that when people are ready, they will understand what this book is about. It will become popular, and apparently that's beginning to happen now.
Yeah, in my mind, that is what happened. And I'm telling all my friends about it. It's on... just explains a lot of things the Bible doesn't explain, and the planet is ready to receive that type of information.
And if anything, it taught me to Hilly to read the Bible. I read the Bible cover to cover twice in the past 3 years, just because I found so much in it. When I was in Catholic school, they didn't teach me all this. They was mostly the doom and the gloom, the eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, the guilt, and there's so much good stuff in the Bible. But we're given all the slant that portrays the stuff that'll bring fear to people and raise the money changers.
Well, that's what religion will do for you, right? All right, thank you. This is Hilly Rose. Where are you calling from, please? Hello? Hello, hello, hello. Okay, forget it. Move on. Hi, this is Hilly Rose. Where are you calling from, please?
I'm Ed.
Yes, sir. Will you speak right into your phone so everybody can hear what you have to say?
Okay, I'm Ed. Not necessarily me, but someone who is familiar with the Urantia book and presents white light is a very big part of that new thing. A time where people truly know how the Universal Father government and government actually work, where the true history of your age, of this world, and the cosmology of the universe is actually known about.
Okay, thank you, Ed, for that.
Yeah, thanks for calling. He's talking about something there, the light and life, which is kind of the culmination of evolution after about a billion years. We're so early into having a civilization, Haley. It's only been around about 5,000 years. After millions and millions of years, what's the purpose of a planet? It's supposed to reach an age of light and life where everything is moved to the highest state and the spiritual loyalty in the planet is complete and there's peace on Earth. It takes a while.
To me, that's a very long while. Lifespans we have.
Hopefully we'll be shooting each other after another 100 years or two. At least
right.
Most of the world.
This is Hilly Rose. Where are you calling from, please?
Gainesville, Florida.
Yes, sir. What's your first name?
John.
All right, John. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm on air?
You sure are.
Yeah, I wanted to ask a couple questions of your guest here. In his interpretations of the Uantian book, does he get a feeling that Jesus and Adam and Eve and quote-unquote God are ETs, or are they divine supernatural beings with natural supernatural powers?
Well, we sort of covered that earlier, but go ahead, Kelly.
There's such a variety of angels listed in this book, whether you want to call them ETs or they
I'm
all have
an angels. I'm talking about God, Jesus, and Adam and Eve.
Well, you have.
Do they originate with a divine supernatural power, or are they actually ETs using technology to come to Earth and to guide the Earth?
I think your first description would be more accurate. According to the Urantia book, they're divine creatures, eternal creatures, that being God. The angels, a little further down on the scale, they're creatures.
So God
that,
is a natural, has natural, supernatural powers, no technology involved.
Well, if you call technology being able to build a galaxy, that's pretty good technology. They talk about the Paradise Force organizers. They go into detail on how a galaxy's made.
Okay, so the Urantia is strictly a religious book.
Well, they have
so
a lot.
He's involved at all.
You have.
I think the answer to that, Kelly, is yes. There aren't any ETs as he would describe ETs, and it is indeed a religious book.
Yeah, it is a religious book, and it is a scientific book. It's a psychology book. Depends on what section you want to read.
How can it be a scientific book if you think of God and Jesus as divine, naturally supernatural creatures? How can you think of science and that divine creature in the same book?
Well, I guess science and religion are all one thing to me. It's reality. So,
well,
if you want to focus,
are we talking about man's or God's? They're two different kinds.
Well,
God's reality and man's are two different realities.
Well, I wake
we
up and
we don't know what God is, and we never will know what God is, and that's that, because we're lower down on the scale.
Well, we can attempt to learn who
attempt.
He is.
Right, that's the word.
That's all you can do is attempt.
It's an attempt to decipher something. It's not an absolute book.
It's
not
the,
an absolute truth either.
I think okay, bye. I think that's probably a very apt description. I think people should understand that there is no religion here or no organized religion that bases from the Urantia book. There are discussion groups all over the world. It is not an absolute truth. If you believe it, you believe it.
Well, even the Urantia book says itself it's not absolute truth, that the stuff in here will be old news in a matter of, time, that everything, what Moses taught was pretty basic when you look at it now. The Urantia book, people look back on it 1,000 years from now and say, hey, that's like a first-grade primer. So it's all relative.
All right, so once again, let me remind folks that the fifth revelation, which is the fifth time that the Word of God has come forth, that's the title, by Kelly Elstrott, can be purchased at Amazon.com or just any online bookstore or go to the bookstore itself. And so there's nothing hidden here. And I guess, as you pointed out, Kelly, the Urantia book itself is on the Internet, and people, if they want to plow through it, can.
Yeah, they can get it there or any bookstore.
All right, we will complete our discussion. Take more of your calls on Dreamland concerning the Urantia book. Sitting in for Art Bell, I am Hilly Rose. Book. Two questions, Kelly. One got lost somewhere in here. I asked the question, I don't think I got an answer. It's indicated that Eve, Adam and Eve, well, yeah, were here 37,800 years ago. They were dispatched from Jerusalem. Not Jerusalem, but Jerusalem. What is Jerusalem?
It's, what would you call a system capital of about 600 inhabited planets? You move after you die towards the system capital, and then you go to the constellation capital, and then the super universe capital, and then they just describe all these steps of moving ever inward towards God. And whether you want to call them ETs or whatever, Adam and Eve were from off-world and came here to Earth.
Time travelers.
And this book has a lot of ET stuff in it. I don't know whether you want to call it extraterrestrial. People that live on other planets, they talk about how 90% of them breathe like we do on Earth. And about 2% of the planets are kind of like Mars, where you have just a very light atmosphere. And then about 5% are like Venus, where there's a real, real heavy, dense atmosphere. And about 1% are like the moon, where there's no atmosphere at all. And there's an interesting comment in the book that the closest inhabited planet to us, the one nearby us, has a planet where they have non-breathers with no atmosphere. And they talk about how they have to have electrical installations to shoot up and knock out the asteroids because there's no atmosphere to wear down the asteroids as they come down and pound the people on the planet. So they have these lightning things, like stations to shoot down. Like we're trying to develop these things to shoot down nuclear missiles. Well, they got to do it just to survive every day. Shoot down comets or asteroids that pass because they don't have an atmosphere.
Sounds like the Great Father wanted to make life difficult for everybody.
In the other worlds, they describe Jerusalem, where you're going, where Adam and Eve came from, as having a walls that are made of crystals and gems. And there really is a pearly gate of one giant crystal. Pearl, and that around the wall that's the capital is a 5,000-mile museum that has a display of each inhabited world in that system.
5,000-mile?
Museum, and each of the sections in the museum are panoramas and displays of what life is like, portraying what life is like on those worlds. So I wonder what they're showing is going on Earth right now. War in Kosovo or... waterfalls in Colorado, or I guess it changes every day, and they show a different facet of life here.
Don't let Disney know about this. I'll take it over.
I think there's little mechanical men in there. I don't know. It's just such an interesting story. They talk about CNN universe broadcasts almost, where you can have broadcasts from all over the universe, activities that are going on night and day.
Well, we keep listening. But we haven't
picked it up. Well, what they say is that we don't get it here on Earth, that we're an isolated planet, because ever since Lucifer revolted, this section of the galaxy has been on, what do you call it, embargoed, or has an embargo around it from all contact. And not until his trial is over, and he's at trial right now, according to this book, and it should come to an end shortly.
Gee, you know, maybe they got somebody like James Earl Jones up there who says, this is CNN. You know, and we're missing all that.
Well, I can't hope the trial's over before I die. That's all I can say.
All right, finally, and this is maybe, before I get back to calls here, maybe a way for us to understand what this is all about. Can we talk about the thought adjuster?
Well, that's a topic of the evolution of the soul in my book, and it talks about how we each have a piece of God within us, and when we make our first moral choice when we're about 5 years old to do right or wrong, a piece of God comes to dwell within us, and we each have a unique personality that if we try to do right instead of wrong, eventually when we die, we fuse with this thought adjuster and become eternal. And the word thought adjuster sounds kind of funny. I couldn't get used to it the first time I read the book, but really it means that it's adjusting the thoughts so the angels can understand them, and adjusting the angels' thoughts so you can understand them. And when you're sleeping is really when deep spiritual transformations take place in your mind. And if you look at the brain graphs, your brain is more active when you're asleep than when you're awake. And that's really when your thought adjuster and your brain are working on building your soul. It's taking all your best thoughts of the day and stacking them up and throwing out all the trash, kind of like a data dump on your computer, and keeping the good stuff. So the thought adjuster is really your ticket to heaven.
Okay, but your ticket to heaven, depending on what you do with the life that you have.
Yeah, if you don't, if you use a thought adjuster, it recycles, goes back to another person. God's not wasted, but you, all your best memories go with him, and then, yeah, there's no hell when you die. If you choose not to be a good guy, then you just go to the worms. Like, that's the end. There's no, your loving Father in heaven is not going to have this eternal torture for someone. God doesn't recognize iniquity, so if you become evil, you just become non-existent. In fact, you could be alive, it says in this book, and already be spiritually dead. And just your mind and your animal mind and your body still working, but your soul itself has already died.
Seems to me a lot of folks like that.
Walking walking mummies, one of those the pod people.
You got it. All right. This is Hilly Rose. Where are you calling from?
Wow.
Dallas, Texas.
Dallas, Texas. Okay. You got two people on here? Oh.
I'm going to talk on a regular phone, okay?
No.
I can't believe I'm down on the air.
I have to get away from the radio in the room.
Okay, that's very smart.
One moment.
All right, where are you calling from?
Let you talk to Ann.
Yes, right.
Hello.
Okay, Ann, where are you calling from?
I am calling from Garland, Texas, which is a part of the Dallas metro area.
All right. You go right ahead.
Wonderful. I've been reading the Urantia book now for a year and a half. I've been studying it intensely. And it's the most wonderful thing I've found since the Bible, okay? Could I discuss a revelation that was given to me, which concerns the Bible and its correlation with the Urantia book?
You go right ahead.
All right. I'm a little nervous. Sorry about that. I always wondered why all Christians, and I was a Christian, I guess I still am, by the Urantia studier now, why it says in the Bible in Psalms 22, well, people always said that Jesus, while he was hanging on the cross, said, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Okay? And I thought, man, he was doing the will of the Heavenly Father. Why would God turn his back on his beloved son? Now, this is before I started studying Urantia. So I prayed about this, and I opened up the Bible to Psalm 22. And it says, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Is the first sentence in Psalm 22. Well, that was pretty cool, because apparently Jesus was, you know, hanging up there, and during times of pain and unconsciousness, he was drifting in and out, and he was quoting scripture from the Heavenly Father. So I got my Urantia book, and on page 2010, it talks about the last hour on the cross, and down here in the middle it says, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Jesus did not for one moment entertain the slightest doubt that he had lived in accordance with the Father's will, and he never doubted that he was now laying down his life in the flesh in accordance with the Father's will. He was, it says here that he was going in and out of consciousness, and he was quoting the Father's word out of the Bible.
Okay. And there's a lot of stuff in there like that, Hilly, where another place where it has a lot of scripture is where they talks about the Remembrance Supper, where he has the Last Supper, and where he really has communion for the first time with the apostles, is that the apostles close the Remembrance Supper with the Psalm, I think it's 118. And so I like to read that Psalm whenever I have communion now, because this is what the apostles did. It's the same words they were reading when Jesus, they sang that at the close of the Last Supper. So it's kind of exciting to tie in the things we already know with the things in this book.
Okay, thank you much, Ann.
Thanks for calling, Ann.
And I picked up on this. It's sort of interesting. She was saying this was on page 2010 of the Urantia book, and I remember you saying about an hour ago that 2010 is when they're going to have this changeover.
Oh, that guy was saying that. I don't know where he got that from.
Know, but it's just...
they don't give any dates in here. It doesn't have... It says, yeah, Jesus will come again, but it says the angels don't know any more than we do.
Interesting. All right.
And that's another interesting thing in this book. A lot of things, it reaches a point where the angels say they don't know any more than we do, like the galaxies that are way out there. They say what we see through our telescopes isn't much more than they know either.
Yeah. You're on the air, sir. I hit the button early. Where are you calling from?
Hey, Sal, from the Long Room.
Yes, sir.
Look, man, I want to ask Kelly there if you ever heard of Martin Gardner.
That's the guy who wrote a book.
Urantia.
A book about the Urantia book, kind of describing the origins of it?
Yeah.
I read that book a few years ago before I wrote my book.
Uh-huh.
And what I tried to do was tie that in with what I'd read in the Urantia book, and it really gets a lot involved into Seventh-day Adventism and how The Urantia book parallels that. And
where this sleeper got all his information and stuff.
Yeah, and this guy, professed, he tried to do a bunch of research trying to figure out the Urantia book, but you got to, by the truth, you know it. The guy who wrote that book is head of an atheistic cult, you know. If a guy can write a book about God, if he's an atheist...
Well, all your callers, they ought to get this book, because I was a fanatic also, so after I read this book, and I threw that book away after that.
Well, you got to be careful. You can get a fanatic about eating. You can get a fanatic about God.
Well, because my listeners are, you know, I was the same way.
Well, you're probably better off. If you were fanatic about it, it wasn't for you. You weren't ready
for
it.
Yeah, well, you know what I mean.
Okay, well...
After I'd read that book, you know, it just took it apart by nuts and bolts, man. The whole thing, it debunked it.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm glad you read it, because you evidently...
For all your callers, you know, listeners, you ought to pick up that book by Martin Gardner.
Okay, thank you.
Urantia.
All right. He's, you pick it up, but it's a terrible book, so I don't understand that. But he's from New Orleans, too, so there you go.
Well, I think everyone has to be careful. This book may not be for you. If you're not ready for the fifth revelation, you may just want to be with the fourth. I don't want to upset anybody.
Well, what happened here? I don't know. He's still online. Maybe it was not in God's plan to... So we're calling him back. I don't know. For whatever reason, it dropped out. And these things just don't happen, friends. You know, there are reasons for it. I don't know exactly what the reason is, but we'll find that out in just a moment. So if Kelly's listening, do hang up. We're calling you right back and trying to figure out a way to... complete our conversations here.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah,
I can hear you. You cut me off twice.
No, you just drop off.
That's I'm right here. Please put me on again. I don't want to end on that last call.
Okay. All right, hold on.
God, dreams, angels, universe, travel, eternity. Yeah, lots more.
Back Hilly?
Yes. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think that last caller came and cut my phone line.
Yeah, he was from New Orleans, so that's possible. I've never had that happen before, Kelly. I mean, it was like a sharp... It's sort of like the chemtrails, you know, you watch them up in the sky, and this airplane is out ahead of it, and then suddenly there's no more chemtrail, and the plane keeps going. I mean, there's a cutoff. It's like a knife. It's really weird. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, just to sum up, I know we're about to end, that this book is the fifth revelation. What I did was take like 10 passages on eternity or prayer from the Urantia book and a piece of artwork and try to give you a feeling of what the big book had to say. And it can really tie together your origin and your destiny. And it gives you a feeling that you are unique and an important part in the universe and that you have a great future ahead of you. And if you just choose to do the will of God within you, that you're on the road to eternity. So it's...
And these scientific findings, like particularly out in the cosmos.
If you're interested in sociology, astronomy, psychology, history, anthropology, any subject, the Urantia book covers it in detail. And like some of the callers have said, the book is real complicated, and there's a lot of stuff in it that can just blow your mind. And if you're not ready for it, then you're not ready for it. Go back to what makes you comfortable, and it's not something to... disturb people or to stop them or start an ism. If it made them go off too far in a direction, they weren't ready for it to back up and start over.
Do you find that there is a growing interest in the Urantia book?
Yeah, well, there's about 350 study groups around the United States and a lot of cities where people get together, you know, bring their kids and they play in the yard and the people read passages from the book and discuss it.
But my question is it growing rapidly?
Yeah, the sale of the book has really taken off, especially in Spanish-speaking countries have really embraced it, too, lately.
All right, Kelly, thank you very much for spending this evening with us. That's Kelly Elstrott, book The Fifth Revelation, available just about anywhere.
Thanks for having me.
I will be back with you tomorrow night, talking about UFOs and complete abductions. And we will start, of course, back with you on Tuesday.
Hey, Kelly?
Yeah?
Sorry about the phone problems. I hit the end, but...
Well, I'm glad you got me back on. I really appreciate you trying twice.
Yeah, and it was a good show, too.
Okay. Thank you for having me.
All right.
Yeah, bye.